Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, preparing for disaster in America, on October 7th, 2014. Voted best local radio show in the Daily Breeze Reader Voice Poll 2014, and we're very glad about that. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For more information, visit their website at www.academyofforeignlanguages, all spelled out, academyofforeignlanguages.com, or call 310-975-4133. That's 310-975-4133. You can find out more about us at facebook.com/The South Bay Show, or visit us on our website at thesouthbayshow.com. Preparing for disaster in America. This is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, your family's lives, that of a neighbor in a time of crisis, or the life of a treasured pet. Our mission is to engage hearts and minds and build knowledge and skills to help you prepare for whatever may come. This show is a true collaboration with solid roots in the community and a partnership with the official disaster preparation establishment. Our producer is founder and president of the local Manhattan Beach CERT Association and the Red Cross's community ambassador to Manhattan Beach, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, listeners. I'm fine. Thank you very much. Beautiful day here.
It is a beautiful day. And, of course, with us today is owner, producer, writer of SouthBayByJackie.com, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well this morning, Joe. How are you, George?
I am wonderful.
I was made aware in the last couple of days that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has made immediate donations of $50 million to help with the outbreaks of Ebola in Liberia and other adjacent countries because of the severe nature of the outbreak and the fact that they're putting so many resources into this Ebola outbreak that it's literally bankrupting the rest of their healthcare system. And so I know the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has made that commitment. Other agencies and foundations around the world are similarly contemplating such investments. It's a huge, huge effort. But I wonder if it's the, you know, that old cart before the horse kind of thing, because it really is getting coming home now with the first case diagnosed in Dallas, Texas hospital in critical care right now. It's quite a thing, and of course we have the guests to talk about that. Jackie, who's our guest today?
Our guests this morning are Harlan Dolgen and Dave Reddick of the Biodefense Network. Harlan has been a certified business continuity professional since 2003. With more than 15 years' experience in the areas of business continuity, disaster recovery, emergency management, and pandemic preparedness. He is currently co-owner of the Biodefense Network, a firm specializing in pandemic and bioterrorism preparedness for public and private sector organizations. Harlan is an adjunct assistant professor of community health at St. Louis University, teaching business continuity management and pandemic planning. In 2006, Harlan was became founder and co-chair of PandemicPrep.org, a not-for-profit organization working to prepare the St. Louis region for the next pandemic. PandemicPrep.org is the nation's leading grassroots pandemic planning organization and a trusted partner with FEMA, HHS, Department of Homeland Security, and OSHA. Prior to his business continuity and disaster recovery career, Harlan practiced civil and trial law for 8 years. He has maintained his law license with the state of Missouri since 1986. David Reddick was among the small group of innovators who co-founded PandemicPrep.org. He served in various roles with the organization since its creation, including executive director from 2009 until 2012. He then co-founded BioDefense Network in 2011, is a co-owner, and has worked part-time for the organization for 3 years. Dave is also a certified business continuity professional as well. He has more than 4 decades of communications experience, including work as a daily newspaper journalist, media and community relations executive, and crisis communicator. He was also the co-founder in 2000 of the Clayton, Missouri-based information technology security firm Global Velocity. In the St. Louis area, Dave has handled crisis communications for several corporations and currently is a quality assurance specialist for St. Louis University's Information Technology Services Division, where he coordinates the organization's business continuity disaster recovery planning process. He is a recent graduate of the St. Louis University College for Public Health and Social Justice's Emergency Management and Crisis Leadership Master's Degree Certificate Program. Before moving to St. Louis, Dave was active in the South Florida community, having been the local coordinator for the annual meeting of the Southern Governors Association and the Florida Congressional Partnership Program. He also managed the International Media Center for the Summit of the Americas in Miami, the historic gathering of elected leaders from the Western Hemispheres hosted by President Clinton. Now, you mentioned you touched a little bit on what we're going to talk about this morning, and we'll be discussing how businesses can help assure the safety of their employees and families during a bioterrorism event, and how local public health departments can benefit from working with business continuity professionals to conduct valuable outreach to their communities. Harlan, Dave, welcome to the program. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Thanks. This is Dave. So in respect, out of respect for your advertiser, I would say como estas. we're very happy to be a part of this organization, and thank you so much for including us. These are some interesting times for people in public health, and we're glad to be able to chat with you about it.
Well, it's wonderful to have you, and what a timely show! It just all came together very, very quickly, and we thank you for joining us. So let's start with you, Dave. We're going to talk about the news of the day, but give us an overview of how you guys came up with the concept for BioDefense Network.
I'll be happy to do that, Joe. Harlan and I were two of the three co-founders of PandemicPrep.org 8 years ago, and that organization has continued over the years to produce generally quarterly fora for the community in the Midwest here in St. Louis, business, academia, public health, and other organizations who come together to hear free and open discussion about pandemics specifically. And we started it, as I said, 8 years ago with the concern particularly about avian flu, which seemed to be the thing that was most frightening to public health preparedness people. Then we, in 2011, St. Louis County asked for proposals to help them expand what are called their closed points of dispensing. So in the event of a bioterrorism attack to a community, the Department of Homeland Security and the Centers for Disease Control will very quickly, and I mean in a matter of hours, will deliver life-saving medications to the local public health departments in the area where the attack has taken place. And those health departments will have only 48 hours from the time the attack was recognized to get those medications to every person in the community. Now, in St. Louis County, that represents about 1 million residents. In Los Angeles County, that's about 12 million, I believe. How are you going to get medications to 10 million, 12 million, 1 million? It doesn't matter the number. How are you going to do that? So most local public health departments of larger size plan to activate what are called open points of dispensing. And these are generally schools or sometimes gymnasiums where they will put the word out that said, go to any of the following schools and basically stand in line, I like to say, with 50,000 of your closest friends and neighbors and wait to get these medications, which are free, but still you have to wait in line, have to be processed. So an alternative to the open points of dispensing program is what are called closed points of dispensing. And these are places that are set up generally by businesses, not exclusively businesses, but generally by businesses which agree to accept the medications for all of their employees and the employees' dependents and handle the distribution at their place of business. And so this gives the businesses an opportunity to help serve their employees better and help. And so every time, for every person who served in a closed point of dispensing, that's one less person who's standing in line at an open point of dispensing. So it takes a lot of pressure off the local public health department. And Joe, I've said this many times before, so if I'm talking too much, just say stop. But let me just finish. I'm happy to take a breath here. But I do what's called circular breathing. You know, magicians do that, where they just breathe in their nose and blow out their mouth. So I can kind of talk without taking a big breath. So pardon me if I do that.
Okay.
So we were very successful here in St. Louis County. We submitted a proposal. The proposal was accepted. And at that time, St. Louis County had coverage of about 23% of its 1 million population. 230,000 people were covered by the largest employer, the largest university, the first responders, and the local hospitals. But that left 77% left to be served. So we agreed with St. Louis County to go out and help persuade other businesses to become local closed points of dispensing. And our goal was to increase that number from 23% to 35%. And we said, well, give us a stretch goal. We think we can do the 23% because we've spent the last 6 years, or the last 4 years, I guess, working with local health departments and local businesses. So we knew who to talk to in the larger businesses in the community. And we did that. We asked for a stretch goal, and they said, well, if you can get to 50%, we would be ecstatic. Well, we said, well, we'll try it. You know, we know we can get to 35%, but we'll shoot for 50. So it was a very short-term operation. We had about 4 months starting in February of 2011. And so we started, and we very quickly reached our goal of 35%. And pretty soon thereafter got to 50%. We got almost every large employer in this community, which so the numbers add up pretty quickly. You know, a large employer may have 6,000, 12,000 employees, and so if you count their dependents as well, that's a large number of people who can be covered. So we very quickly blew through 35% and pretty quickly hit 50%, and it ended up at 73%. That means basically 3 out of 4 residents in St. Louis County are now covered at a closed point of dispensing. They don't need to go to a high school. They can just come to work and pick up medications for themselves and their family. So that was very successful. And we were so successful, we began offering similar services outside of the community. And we now have done work in Dallas County, Austin, Travis County, Independence, Missouri, Oswego County, New York, Butte County, California. And we expect to start very soon with work in Ralph County, Texas, Seattle, Washington, and hopefully outside in Boston area, do some work with Boston. So we're expanding the service. We know the model works, and it's one that we think will help save lives. That's what we're all about. We're trying to help local health departments do a better job of protecting their residents.
Now,
I'll take a breath now.
Yes, thank you very much. Now, when I first heard this model, I was simply blown away by the simplicity and the logic of it. I mean, it's naturally distributed. Where people work is where they go to get their doses in closed points of dispensing. These are private employers that have an incentive to serve their employees and to be good stewards of their employees' health. And it just makes so much sense. Now, I have to ask Harlan, Dave, the tough questions. Harlan, Yes, don't worry, Dave.
He's good at tough questions.
Harlan, why
he's,
can't...
He's my partner attorney, so I get the hard questions to Harlan.
Harlan, why and again, this makes so much sense. Why can't these departments of public health, these county agencies, why can't they go out and solicit these private employers on their own? Why do they need the biodefense network?
Well, and sometimes they can, and some departments choose to do that. Number one, they've got too much to do. They've had their staff cut. Some departments have had their staff cut by around 50% of their people over the last few years because of budget cuts, and everybody's aware the last few years there's been lots of government budget cuts. And that certainly trickled down to the communities. And so they're expected to do more. They're working with less people. They've got more hats and more responsibilities than they've ever had before. So part of it is just a time issue and resource issue that they can't do it. The other question becomes, do they have the ability to sort of talk business ease, business jargon, with business people? And a lot of times they don't, and they're fearful that they're not going to present the case correctly, and they don't talk, you know, things like return on investment. And this is a difficult thing to sell to some business people, but if you really, depending on the language you use, if you really understand why businesses are there and that they really can't work without their employees, mm-hmm. and if they, and a lot of them have programs where they try to protect their employees, and so this just fits into another slot where they're trying to protect their employees. Certainly medium to large size businesses have what are called business continuity programs, mm-hmm. where there's somebody like Dave and I that are in that company. Specifically, their job is to make sure that company is survivable no matter what, because they can't have an interruption in service to customers. I mean, it's really not acceptable anymore in this day and age of resilient systems and replication of data from this site to that site. The companies are not in a position where they can say to customers, I'm sorry, we can't service you today or this week. You know, mm-hmm. come back to us next week. Mm-hmm. So they always have to be, companies always have to be aware of how they can protect not only their data, but also their people. And this is a way to protect their people.
It's
so I guess back to your point is yeah. that public health people don't always know how to raise that conversation effectively with the businesses.
Mm-hmm. But
and keep in mind, we're talking about government. They've never been exactly efficient.
Very true. Well, I like to add to that oftentimes if a business person hears that the public health department is at the front door, they think they've had bad food in their cafeteria, mm-hmm. or they're doing something wrong, and so they don't reach out to ask for help with their public health department as much mm-hmm. as they ought to, because most public health department officials are really interested in protecting their community. That's what they get up in the morning thinking about: how can I do a better job of protecting this community? And Jackie, they're pretty damned efficient, quite mm-hmm. frankly. They do an excellent job. I know that not all government does, but public health normally does a superb job of protecting their employees, protecting their communities, and that's what they wake up in the morning thinking about. So
this idea, when I first heard it with the Biodefense Network, reminds me very much of many of the business models that you see and hear in the tech sector, in the Silicon Valley world, where an idea comes to the fore, that when you hear it and you look at St. Louis and you say, well, they went from 23% coverage with open pods, open points of dispensing that were managed by the county, to 73% where the county and private employers partnered, it's just a no-brainer. If anyone heard that case and said, well, why can't we do that in our county? It would really be a situation of just, you know, how do we do it? When can we get started? I mean, because the difference is stark, 23% versus 73% coverage. Every county in the nation should want to do this, right, Dave?
I think so. And the sell to the business person is, if there is an anthrax attack in this community, would you like your employees to be cowering at home with their families, frightened, unwilling to come to work, standing in line with 50,000 of their closest friends and neighbors at Kirkwood High School, or would you like them to come to work? And that the answer is pretty simple. How do I get them to come to work? And the answer to that is, well, you get them to come to work by offering them these life-saving medications at the workplace for themselves and their families. Well, the next question is, how much is this going to cost me? Well, the cost is zero. There's no charge for these medications. It will it will take some time to do the planning and exercising of those plans, but that's the kind of thing that businesses need to do anyway, whether they're planning for an anthrax attack or a flood or a loss of power or a building collapse or whatever. So the planning has to take place, but it's the kind of planning that professionals like Harlan and I do every day with our full-time business employers.
Well, it's something that that still, when I hear the story, and of course I know a little bit about the story because we've been talking, Harlan and David and I, about this business and how much I really admire what you do. But when you hear this story, it really still, even today, it just strikes me as such a logical extension of what the departments of public health do, that they should engage with someone to go out and solicit these private employers. And of course the Biodefense Network is right there with the experience and the plans in place to do so. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back, and we're going to talk about more about the Biodefense Network, but we're also going to talk about current events, which are not spiraling out of control, but are certainly moving rapidly. Every day there's new information and new reporting being done that's pretty amazing. But first, care of a little business. Jackie, who do we want to thank today?
Joe, it's never too early to begin planning your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, certified public accountants and consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, the Torrance South Bay YMCA, Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. For more information, visit the website at www.bcws.com or call 310-542-0011.
Well, you know, when I say spiraling out of control, I mean, I don't know how many people are following this, but of course, this is not just an American phenomena. There were two Spanish missionaries, actually a Spanish missionary and a Spanish priest, who had been working in West Africa. They were returned to Spain. They subsequently died, but a nurse assistant in Spain is the first person known to have contracted Ebola outside of Africa in the current outbreak. And the Spanish officials are currently dealing with that case. This gentleman in Dallas, Texas, did not contract the disease in the U.S. He contracted it in Liberia, flew to the U.S. But this woman, a nurse assistant, contracted Ebola in Spain. And this is, as you can imagine, causing quite a stir in the EU. And then, of course, here in Dallas, Texas, we have a Republican governor who's a very active governor. He's convened a an Ebola council. They're going to make recommendations about what should be done. They're looking at stepped up border controls in Texas. And this is the other half. We talked a lot about, when I talked with Harlan and Dave, we talked about, of course, bioterrorism and those kinds of protections against anthrax, but also pandemics. Harlan, when you think about this happening at this time, how do you think many of the counties that you contacted are processing this information?
They're mindful of the fact that it could come to their community. They're all watching Dallas to see how Dallas County Health and Human Services responds to this event. I know in St. Louis County, they're doing that. They're sort of ramping up for the potential of an outbreak, or of not really even an outbreak, but a single case in their community.
Right.
Because that's what we're talking about. In the whole United States, there's a single case, and that's in Dallas County. So it's not time to push the panic button yet, but certainly it's a time to be watchful of events, world events, and local events, to see what's going on in each community.
Right. And yes, Dave.
May I throw something here? We mentioned earlier that Harlan and I were both involved with PandemicPrep.org, and last week we held one of our forums, and the infectious disease control physician who has been with us the whole time spoke about primarily about Ebola, but he started his presentation by asking this question. So let me list four diseases: Ebola, MERS, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, coronavirus, enterovirus D68, which is affecting children, and influenza. Mm-hmm. Which of these illnesses do you think will kill the most Americans this year?
Mm-hmm.
And okay. I'm sure you know the answer. Okay, what?
Influenza.
You're right. By far, thousands of Americans die each year from influenza. And that's preventable. It's preventable. Get the shot. I got my shot last week. Get the shot. Easy. I didn't even feel it. It was a tiny little pinprick. Get the shot, folks. If you haven't gotten an influenza shot yet, shame on you. If you're afraid of needles, you can do the inhaled vaccine. It's the best way to avoid the disease that kills most Americans out of that list. However, that's not at all to minimize the fright that's being created by the Ebola outbreak, which is a horrible illness for people who get it. Kills about half the people who are affected by it, if not more. So I don't mean at all to minimize the reason to be concerned about Ebola. But as Harlan pointed out, or I think, Joe, you did too, there aren't that many people in the United States yet who have gotten, none that we know of, who have contracted it, who have been exposed and contracted it here in the United States. But that could very well happen. I mean, this is a huge country.
Right.
We have lots of people coming and going. The nurse in Madrid is a perfect example. She was apparently provided the sort of protection device, protective equipment she needed, but nevertheless was exposed and contracted the illness. So even the most careful preparations won't necessarily keep people from getting Ebola, but the typical kind of treatment regimens that most know how to do and most local health departments are familiar with should keep it from becoming an outbreak here in the United States. But it's still a deadly illness. It's something we need to be aware of.
Just yesterday, I was made aware that British Airways has stopped direct flights from Liberia and other affected countries, specifically because the UK and other countries in the European Union are very, very concerned. They have lots and lots of interaction with West Africa, much more than we
right.
do here in the U.S. And so there's a much, much greater chance of people traveling back and forth between West Africa and the European Union. And so there's quite a bit of concern there. I have to ask, Harlan, I mean, when we talk about this, you know, it isn't just It isn't a supposed thing. It isn't a table exercise. You were just in Dallas, and I don't know. Are you still in Dallas, Harlan?
I am still in Dallas. I'll be leaving either tonight or tomorrow.
And you were actually fielding calls from the public. Tell us about why you went to Dallas, and then tell us about your experience.
Sure. So first of all, well, and I'll also respond to the airline cutting mm-hmm. off travel, because I think that's an important issue too.
Mm-hmm.
But so the reason I came to Dallas is, first of all, Dallas County was our first client outside of St. Louis County, so we have a real affinity for them. We've been working with them for 2 years, and we're about to start our third contract. And last year, I decided to join the Medical Reserve Corps, the MRC, here in Dallas County. So I've been trained, and they put out a call to all volunteers for the MRC to help with the call center, and a separate call out for people to leave information on people's doorsteps, you know, in certain neighborhoods around where the person was infected, that is here in Dallas County. So they're being very proactive, which is very, very good. They're trying to get as much information out. And so I've helped them yesterday and today manage the call center, or not manage the call center. I've been one of the volunteers that have been taking calls and responding to calls from the public. And we've had some very interesting calls. So, to kind of set the stage, there was so this person that has Ebola was transported in an ambulance, and before they knew that he had Ebola, the ambulance also transported a homeless person right after. It just went on another call, the ambulance did, and it picked up a homeless person. So there's been a couple issues surrounding the homeless person that we fielded. So one national retailer said that homeless person, who is being monitored, by the way, he does not have Ebola. He's not showing any signs of Ebola at all, but he's being monitored. And so one national retailer, the lawyer for that firm called and said he was in our bathroom afterwards. You know, what precautions do we need to take? And because he was showing no symptoms, the answer was really none. He cannot give someone else, he can't transmit Ebola to someone else if he's not showing symptoms himself. So that was absolutely safe. And then another situation, someone purporting to be his sister from outstate called, I think from Oklahoma, actually called trying to find this gentleman because his name has been published in the news. And so we had to refer them on to the Emergency Operations Center here in Dallas County. But I thought that was just interesting. So other things we've gotten, people are very alarmist and overreacting and thinking one lady had a nosebleed, which she's never had nosebleeds before. So somehow she thinks she has Ebola.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to assure her she doesn't have Ebola unless she's come in contact with this one gentleman, which she hadn't. And so she wanted to get tested. And we said, well, there's no test that will tell you that you have Ebola if you don't have symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And although hemorrhaging, so bleeding, is one of the symptoms, but a simple nosebleed with no other symptoms would not be Ebola. So we just had to assure this person that they can always, we refer a few people to their doctors to get tested. And, you know, so some people have called in, they're sick or their children are sick with flu-like symptoms and they're wondering if they have Ebola and can be tested for Ebola.
Right.
But if they have not come in contact with this gentleman, we've assured them that there's absolutely no chance that they have Ebola. It doesn't spread that way. It's not airborne. It's not through the water. You have to be in direct contact with someone's bodily fluids in order to get it.
And not only do you have to be in direct contact, it has to be what they, I forget the term exactly, but there have to be enough virus per milliliter of fluid to be actually infect you, and that only occurs when someone is in full display of symptoms. But all of this, Harlan, all of these details are lost on the public. They're thinking, you know, to my mind, they're thinking Andromeda strain. If the guy was, you know, down the street and the wind blew, I got it.
Right, and you absolutely can. And that's why to address the public airway, I'm sorry, the British Airways rules now that they're not going to go to Liberia or bring people from Liberia into the UK. That, to me, that's sort of a publicity stunt because somebody from Liberia can just go to Switzerland or Germany or France or anywhere else and then go to the UK and, you know, if they want to get there bad enough, they'll get there. It'll just cost them a little more to do it. But that's not necessarily the answer, is to stop all travel from countries that are impacted. Because if somebody wants to get into your country, they can get into your country.
It's also one of the key points made from the office of the president and other members of Congress that this is an economic issue that we as well as the UK and the EU do a lot of business with Africa, and it's a global community. It's a small world. And that's why we need to fight this on the ground. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has pledged $50 million of emergency aid and support to Liberia and other of countries on the borders of Liberia. And other agencies around the world are looking at similar-sized donations and help. This is something that could have been done last week, the week before, last month, 6 months ago, but it wasn't until it began to come home to America that this emergency has occurred. Is that something that you think is helpful, or is it something that is really just, again, like a publicity stunt, or it's too little too late?
Let me respond briefly to that, Joe.
Sure, Dave.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Some wise politician, I think he was I don't remember who he was exactly, used to say, the best time to plant an oak tree was 50 years ago. The second best time is today. Mm-hmm. So it's never too late to do the right thing. So the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, I salute them for making this donation. If it had been yesterday or last week, it would have been maybe a little bit better, incrementally better, but the money is important and will be used well, I'm sure. The problem in West Africa, of course, is that the regular hospitals are being overrun by the patients who are suffering from Ebola, and patients who have malaria and other illnesses are not being able to be served. So they're dying or becoming more ill as a result of that. So the proposal put forth by the administration of the United States earlier, I guess last month, to build new hospitals for Ebola, I think is a great approach to dealing with that. The challenge is always getting the hospitals there, getting them set up, the time it takes to do that. But it's always the right time to do the right thing. So good for them for doing that, and good for other countries who are stepping up to help respond to this problem.
Right.
I read an article in Time magazine this weekend about this, and they were talking about how, I guess, we're sending 3,000 troops over there to set up hospital tents and help them there with their healthcare infrastructure. And one of the other things I read was that I think it was Ebola virus was first identified, was it 1976?
Sounds right.
Yeah. And that they mentioned in the article that the doctors or researchers, scientists are furiously working on a vaccine for it now. Were they not working furiously prior to this?
Jackie, I don't know. I'm probably not as furiously as they are now. But I think that's because the large number of people who are affected with this outbreak, not just because it's spread to a minor degree to other countries. In the past, Ebola has been pretty much in Central Africa, and it's been fairly modest in its outbreak. Those are smaller countries with fewer people and no large cities.
And it happened in remote areas. It was always
in remote
villages. This is the first time it's coming to a city.
Exactly. And the Western Africa countries that are they're involved now are more populated, have larger cities, and so the spread has been much faster. But until earlier this year, they had not been forced to deal with Ebola. They knew it was there, and they probably knew it was a possibility, but nobody had been doing the hard work that needed to be done to prepare for it. So the outbreak is much more serious now than it has been over the past 30, 40 years. So that's probably why people have become more furious in their efforts to find a vaccine for it. But good for them. I hope they are successful and can find something to stop this. I saw something a couple weeks ago where I think it was the CDC, and it may have been just Nigeria, gave a worst-case projection of what the worst case could be in that country. As I recall, it was 1.4 million people could come down with Ebola in that nation. And that's a lot of folks. We don't, no doubt about that. I brought that home when I started thinking about it because St. Louis County has a million population, and St. Louis City, which is not a part of the county, has about 325,000 for a total of about 1.3 million. So I thought, wow, if this entire county and city, everyone in this county and city came down with Ebola, that would just be astonishing and be nightmarish. That's what's happening potentially in Liberia. So there are a whole lot of counties around this country that have about a million four population. So if we look at it that way, the LA County is much larger, obviously, but think of a part of Los Angeles County that has a million four population, and imagine that everyone in that jurisdiction became ill with this disease. It's a mind-boggling thought.
Absolutely. Now, we're going to give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit more about how the Biodefense Network can engage with a county and help them become more prepared by this concept of closed points of dispensing, private companies being able to participate with the county's open points of dispensing. But right now, George, we'd like to give you an opportunity to tell us what's coming up in future shows.
Wonderful. Very good. I don't know.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. next Tuesday. It's been another one of those couple of weeks here. I'm not sure if everybody's out of town or just not willing to talk to me these days.
Yeah.
But I'm looking for a guest this next Tuesday. But on top of that, the things that are going on around our community and around the South Bay. Come Friday evening at Pacific School is their movie night for charity, and we will be there providing medical service and information on our CERT organization and our upcoming class. And, of course, this coming Saturday is our CERT muster. Jackie, I didn't see you on the RSVP list, or you, Joe.
Oh, I'm coming.
I don't know if I got a thing to RSVP to, but I do have it on my calendar.
Okay. All right.
Semi-busted.
Yeah. All right. It was the thing that said call Cleo, 10 a.m., and I'm going to RSVP for both of you.
Okay.
Okay.
And you can, of course, bring your family, bring your spouses, because you're going to need somebody to cheer you on. And then, of course, on 10/25 is our shakeout in Manhattan Beach, where we're going to activate, work with Neighborhood Watch, and communicate problems back and forth to the EOC and the big thing going on. November 1, 8, and 15, three Saturdays, 8 hours a day, 24 hours of the best training that could save yours and or your family member's life. So our CERT class that I will be doing the lead on, I welcome anybody that's interested in finding out more. Give me a shout out at info@mbcerta.org, and that's it right now.
Okay.
hopefully I will. I'll find somebody that wants to spend next Tuesday morning with us. Either that, or you'll have to fire me.
We'll cut your salary in half.
Ah, you know, I understand that. I really do.
Shakeout.org, shakeout.org, October 16th at 10:16 a.m., 10:16 at 10:16.
That's the official Shakeout. And, of course, we do ours on Saturday so we can enjoy the company of those that have to work during the week.
Right. It's these Shakeout events will be happening all over the South Bay, right? On Saturday.
Each of this, your cities will all have their own Shakeout events. Yep.
All right, everybody, find out where your event is located so you can participate. One of the largest earthquake drills anywhere in the year, and it's coming up soon. So get prepared, get registered. And, of course, we're talking with the Biodefense Network, Harlan Dolgan and David Reddick. And it's amazing, Harlan, what has been transpiring, and it's amazing how prepared you guys at the Biodefense Network are for this. You have the relationships and the tools to help these counties get better prepared and add to their resources these closed points of dispensing. What's on the near term horizon, Harlan, for the Biodefense Network?
Well, we've got projects that are going to be starting in Dallas any day now, as soon as their budget gets approved. Bell County, which is about 2 hours south of Dallas. Butte County, which is in California, that's the northern tip above Sacramento by about an hour. Mm-hmm. And in January, we're going to be starting our largest program to date, which is in Seattle, Washington, where we're going to be looking to get 300,000 residents to become enrolled in closed pods. And even larger than that, we're in negotiations with Houston, Texas, to do as many as 1 million residents. Houston has about 4 million residents in total, and they want about 1 million residents in their metropolitan statistical area. So that's actually 14 jurisdictions that they have that are going to do a joint project. And so that's what we have on tap, and that's going to keep us really busy. In addition to New York, which we're doing this month, there's three communities, not New York City, but there's three communities in outstate New York near Syracuse.
Right.
We're going to be up there later this month.
And you guys have a meeting coming up on the 16th and 17th, right?
Right. It's a workshop that is geared towards planning and helping communities plan for closed pods. So if we can train them to do it themselves, that's wonderful. If they can go back into their communities and recruit some closed pods, that would be wonderful.
How can people find out more about this workshop and all that the Biodefense Network does?
Yeah, so you can certainly go to use your terminology, www.biodefensenetwork.com. You can find out a lot of information there. You can contact Dave or I directly. Also, there's an About page, which has our contact information and a lot of information about our different team members.
Okay. Now that's bio-defensenetwork.com.
Yes. I'm sorry, I didn't include the hyphen. So it is bio-defensenetwork.com.
All right. Good. We are getting near the end of the show, but we have some time. Dave, when you step back for a moment and you look what you were doing before the Biodefense Network and what's going on now with the success that you guys are having, the as you said, many people, when you approach them and talk about what the Biodefense Network does, they say, "Oh, well, I already know about you guys. And we've been talking about you." It must be terribly satisfying, Dave.
Well, it is, and let me take another step back and talk about pandemic planning. I like to tell this story. Most of us know that the horrible Spanish flu that blew through the globe, in 1918, and most people don't think they had any relationship with anybody who was involved with the Spanish flu back in 1918. None of us was alive, and you know, we're just totally unaffected by that. But up to 100 million people were killed in that flu worldwide, or more. Nobody will ever know how many people died from that, but it was just horrible. And there was a small family in a small community in South Dakota. The oldest daughter was named Laverne, and she had two younger sisters, and her parents were the Bices. And they ran a small grocery store or general store. And the mother was pregnant with her fourth child, and one day Mr. Bice became ill with the flu and died that day. The next day, the mother gave birth to her first son, and the day after that, the mother became sick with the flu and died of the flu, leaving three adolescents and a newborn. The three adolescents were adopted by the county judge, who later became the congressman from South Dakota. And so he took his new family of three daughters, including Laverne, to Washington, D.C., where he served in the Congress for a number of years. While she was there, Laverne attended George Washington University and studied journalism and met a guy named Bill Lusk and fell in love with Bill. And then the Second World War broke out. Bill was a medic in training, a physician in training, so he became a medic and served in the South Pacific. On his return, they married. He finished medical school in Chicago, and they moved to a small community called Carlinville, Illinois, which is midway between Chicago and St. Louis. Now, I never met Laverne, but she had a daughter, and that daughter is my wife. Mm-hmm. So my wife's mother was dramatically affected by the pandemic of 1918. She was orphaned, and her entire life changed as a result of that. So it's not that far away from the effects of pandemic, what the effects of pandemic can have on a family. So it's so very important that we be prepared for whatever may be out there. And the CERT organizations do a superb job of teaching communities to come together to prepare for themselves and their loved ones. And congratulations, George, for your hard work. But we are all not too far away from sort of things that could dramatically affect our families. I was driving in this morning, and I was thinking that for a number of reasons, we're celebrating 1985 here at my office. That's the first year. That was the year of the I-70 World Series between Kansas City and St. Louis, which may happen again. So we were all encouraged to dress the party in 1985. So the best I could do was, I remember in 1985, I moved to Miami. So I had this Miami-esque shirt that I wore in today. My wife couldn't believe that I was wearing it, but I wore it in. And I realized that that was the first time in my life that I changed careers. I had trained as a journalist and worked as a daily newspaper man in Florida until 1985, when I left the field and went to Miami and worked for a bank. So that was the first time I changed careers. I've changed careers several times. But the change that I made 3 years ago, when Harlan and I co-founded BioDefense Network, is the one that I think will have the most lasting effect on people. We are doing things that are going to save lives. Mm-hmm. We may never know how many lives we save, but we know that the work we're doing will save lives. And what more can you ask of a career than to know that you have had that sort of effect on people? So I just thank God that I'm in this career right now.
Wow.
I have to ask you something. I got to ask you something. What year was it, 85, 86, or 87, that St. Louis and the Dodgers were in the World Series? What year was that?
I don't know. I don't know.
The Dodgers wouldn't be in the World Series with St. Louis.
It must have been playoffs or something.
Could be the National League playoffs.
Oh,
yeah.
But only because I was in St. Louis for those games. I was in St. Louis for those games. I just thought I'd mention.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
It would have been either 85 or 87. Those are the years.
My husband at the time worked for the Dodgers, and so the whole Dodger organization, they flew us out for the games. So we were
in
St. Louis for 3 or 4 days and got to see the games and go to the Busch Stadium, and it was quite a spectacle. We were a little square of blue in a sea of red.
I understand.
Yeah.
Well,
and we'll see how the number 22 does this afternoon.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Clayton gets his shot, and it's well deserved because it's been an amazing year for Clayton Kershaw, our ace pitcher. Harlan, give us a sense of your journey and what you feel you can do with the Biodefense Network.
Well, first of all, it's worth mentioning that we just recently surpassed our millionth enrollee, what we call enrollee, which is a protected resident. We just surpassed our millionth enrollee in terms of what Biodefense Network has done in St. Louis and in Dallas and the other communities. So we're proud of that fact. And this next year, I think we're going to probably come close to the 3 million mark in terms of enrollee, number of enrollees that are protected now by closed pods that we specifically recruited. So very happy for that. It's a great accomplishment to, as Dave said, to be able to say that we've protected lives. And we don't want to be Chicken Little saying that the sky is falling and we know there's going to be something imminent coming, because we don't. And nobody really knows what's coming down the pike. But something that, the people in the know, something that keeps them up at night is a potential anthrax release somewhere in the United States. And who knows where it could be. It could be anywhere. And so while we don't want any Chicken Little saying the sky is falling, we do want to be very prepared and make sure that if an event happens, that we're just ready for it. And it becomes almost a non-event through our preparedness. It wouldn't be a non-event, obviously. It would be very serious. But we're proud of the fact that we're making a difference in people's lives and that we're helping the counties be prepared. The counties are required to do this program by the CDC, who monitors them and actually grades and audits them every year on whether they're able to give medicine to all of their community, to their entire community, if something like this should happen. And so we're really making significant strides in that and helping people be prepared. So we're proud of that.
Mm-hmm. It just seems that what the Biodefense Network is doing is so consistent with some of the great thinking now, whether it be business or government. It's a partnership to provide services. It's a partnership to build roads and bridges. It's one of the greatest combinations of public private resources. I think one of the examples that I've seen recently. We're happy and thrilled that you're with us. Thank you so much, Harlan Dolgan and Dave Reddick, for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Keep
looking forward to chatting with you.
Great, very timely information, and good luck to you both, and I really appreciate your joining us. George, any final thoughts?
I've been taking it all in. This is something that we've been chatting by both email and last night at a board of directors meeting. People want to know what are we going to do, and I keep telling them we are going to do nothing. The Department of LA, Department of Health, is going to take the lead on this even before fire. So I've learned a lot more. I like what's happening here, and let me see what I can find for next week to follow up on this great show. Thank you.
Right. And Jackie, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
This is our show for today, ladies and gentlemen, and of course we will be back on Thursday with a spotlight in the South Bay, and we thank you for a great year, and it's not over yet, but we'll see you on Thursday. Bye-bye now.